Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back from the weekend. This is Tez Talks Taxes, and thank you for bearing with me through the technical difficulties that I've had earlier. So I just want to get right into it and let you know who I am and what's going on for tonight's show and talk to you about our sponsors and our current event that's happening right now. So as far as the current event, we have one at Adirondacks, which is at 189 Bridge Street, and it's over at 12 midnight. So I want you to head over there. It's 189 Bridge Street in Brooklyn. It's an event held by Love, Peace, and Slander. Check it out tonight, and I'm sure you will have an awesome time. They're going to have a lot of things going on, from games to all sorts of stuff. Okay, now I do want to mention our sponsors that we have here on this radio show. So we have ME Productions, that's with a Z, and they can provide all of your digital media needs. You can check them out on Facebook, and their name is ME Productions. And if you send an email to them, they'll reply back, and their email is heyme.tv@gmail.com. Our next sponsor is iCraveWear. I want you to check out their line of Facts hoodies and tees, and also pick up your Time Heals All Wounds dad hats. Go on to their website, which is iCraveWear.com. And if you use the promo code, which is PREGAME, at checkout, you'll get 15% off. Our third sponsor is LitBK. I want you to check out their Star Power Tees and other pieces, which are inspired by Brooklyn, New York, and pop culture. If you use the code PREGAME is LIT on their website, which is litbkny.com, you'll get 20% off of your purchase. I'm going to put these sponsors' websites and their email addresses in the comments section for this radio show. So if you're looking for them, all you have to do is go down to the comments and you'll see it there, and you'll be able to get in contact with them, okay? I'll also put the address for the event that Love, Peace, and Slander is having right now as I speak in the comment section. So if you're looking for it, you can, you know, find it and go right there. But it's 189 Bridge Street in Brooklyn, and it's over at midnight. Now, about me, Tezra, and of course, I'm the host of Tez Talks Taxes. You can find me on Instagram. My handle is Tax Expert. And I also now have a Snapchat page. I decided to get with it. And I know I may be a little late. Don't tease me. But I have a Snap, and it's called Tez Talks Taxes, of course. Yep. So if you're looking for me, type in Tez Talks Taxes, and I will add you on. My experience is that I have 2 decades of financial experience that includes governmental and corporate accounting, corporate and individual taxation. I also teach and write on tax and financial issues, and I handle IRS audits. So I have a lot of information that I love sharing, and I love helping people and guiding them and mentoring them. So I hope that you find tonight's show to be very useful. Now, I do want to mention a couple of the topics that we're going to have this evening. We're going to talk about IRS audits and what triggers them. There are many things that come into play here, and there are some myths that people believe. So I'm going to talk about those and get down to the core of it. I'm going to discuss 10 mistakes. So if you are an entrepreneur, you definitely want to listen to this because it's going to give you those 10 mistakes and it's going to help you out a bit. And then I'm going to talk about S-Corps versus C-Corps. We're going to do a little comparison so you know what you're getting into, help you pick the right entity. Okay? So we're going to take a quick music break. I'm going to play one song, and then I'll be right back in a few minutes to get started on the IRS audit.
Darling, can be strong, we can wait, we can live for so long. Live in a flame where we'll never burn. No one could ever, ever return. You are the reason I'm on you, reason I love you. You're the thing I need, cause it's just you.
My first topic of tonight is, why am I being audited by the IRS? I need to talk about this because a lot of people feel that because they received an IRS notice, that is indicative of an audit. They think that getting something in the mail from the IRS means, oh, I'm being audited, and I need you guys to stop panicking about this. I need you guys to understand what's going on so that you can properly handle the situation. Because we all know that the IRS, like when you receive one of those letters in the mail, it just strikes fear right into your heart, you know. And a vast majority of these notices really are nothing to fear. Since most of them are computer generated, either referring to an unpaid tax bill or an error on your tax return that can be easily addressed. So there's nothing to really worry about here. And as a matter of fact, we're going to talk about the, you know, percentages of the chances of you getting audited. With the IRS data book, it shows that for 2016, fewer than 1% of the individual tax returns that were selected for, fewer than 1% of individual tax returns were selected for field or correspondence audits, okay? So that's 1%. However, the taxpayer advocate, this little operating thing inside the IRS that helps taxpayers out, you are a taxpayer if you work or if you receive income that you have to report on your tax return. So when I say taxpayer, I'm referring to you, all right? But there's this little, you know, inside thing, like this thing about people on the inside, a group of people who are advocating in your behalf, okay? So that's the taxpayer advocate service. They have a watchdog group. And according to that group, 6.2% of tax returns are audited. So it went from the 1% that the IRS data book is saying to 6%. Okay, so you may think of that as a small difference, but it is a pretty substantial difference. Okay, while audits demand backup material and examining your past returns opposed to fixing errors or paying your tax bills, some of those notices are pernicious in their documentation requests, right? So just so you know, only a small amount of the hundreds of millions of tax returns that get filed every year will be audited. All right, let me repeat that. Only a small amount of the hundreds of millions of tax returns that get filed every year will be audited. But if you want to know why this is happening to you or what the risk factors are that increase your chances, I'm going to give you some information about the IRS's audit process, okay? So number one, this may sound funny, but it's not. But either you were incredibly unlucky and just got randomly selected. You know, that is just so unlucky to get randomly selected. But what are your chances of this? So in 2017, only 934,000 tax returns were audited, with a 71% of them being done by mail as opposed to field audits. Okay, you may wonder, what is a field audit? This is my second time using this word. A field audit is a face-to-face meeting, kind of like what you see on TV, where a person is like talking to the IRS face-to-face. However, the audit is done by mail. You get a letter, you call, you reply, you send something in. You're not sitting face-to-face with a particular individual, all right? All right, so of this number, which is that 934,000 number, only a microscopic portion were randomly selected, all right? So the IRS always audits an incredibly tiny sample of tax returns, but the likelihood is extremely low given the incident of random selection, which was reduced under the sequestration in 2013 and remained low even after the IRS petitioned for more funding. But if you are low or middle income, with a relatively simple tax filing situation and wondering why you've been audited, you were part of that tiny random selection. So that shows just how unlucky you are. If you have any questions on that, just send me a message through Instagram, and I'll help explain that concept a little further. But I'm going to move on to number two. Number two is your tax return has a common audit flag. Now, there are several things that can be a trigger, which is what a lot of people will call them, you know, or a red flag, so to speak, okay? But even if you have legitimate deductions, credits, or income substantiation, there are certain lines on your tax return that are rife with errors and fraud across the board. So these include, for example, I'm going to name three of them, the charitable contribution deduction, the home office deduction, and the adoption credit. All right, those three things. Now, there are other things on your tax return that can trigger an audit. For example, the earned income tax credit. That actually has its own separate due diligence process. But the above three items are the most common triggers for an audit. And given the vast propensity people have in understanding these items, it's not having them, and not having them properly documented. So, in other words, there's a large amount of people who are taking these deductions, and they're not keeping up with the paperwork or properly handling the paperwork and doing what they need to do in order to get it properly put onto their tax return. And the IRS knows that this is a common error, so those are common things that are attacked, all right? I shouldn't use the word attack. I should say targeted, so correct me on that, targeted. Anyway, people tend to overestimate the value of their non-cash charitable contributions, and they frequently lack substantiation for these documents. If you're wondering what the word substantiation means, that just means like a receipt or something that helps prove that you are eligible for this deduction. Now, substantiation changes depending on what type of deduction you're looking for. So if you have a question on substantiation, again, check me out on Instagram, and I will answer that question. All right, so the non-cash charitable contributions are a very frequent one, okay? Adoption is an incredibly long and expensive process, and even though it is a legitimate tax benefit in which the adoptive parents will have substantiation, it also equates to a tax credit that can spread over numerous years and result in paying little to no taxes. So because of this alone, the IRS flags these returns frequently. So if you have an adoption credit on your return, beware, watch out, keep your paperwork, talk to your tax professional, make sure everything's straight. Now, the home office deduction is another area where people tend to overestimate both eligible expenses and the percentage or square footage of the home being used. All right? So this deduction can also generate a business loss, resulting in paying little or no taxes. And because of this, the IRS is likely to flag tax returns that have suspiciously large home office deductions. Okay, so just make sure that when you're claiming these credits or these deductions, that you're properly doing it. You want to make sure that you're reading the rules and you're following what the rules are telling you. And if you don't know or if it's confusing, there's nothing wrong with asking a tax expert on this matter, because you really need to get it right, because at the end of the day, it all falls down on you. We're going to move along to number three, which is about snitching. So it's that someone tips off the IRS that you could be cheating on your taxes. Oh, my gosh. You know, this is actually very common. The IRS has something called a whistleblower program, and it awards people up to 30% of the taxes collected and the resultant penalties. They actually have had several huge payouts in the millions. You know, it's crazy. And the most common people who are telling on people are ex-spouses or coworkers. They are the IRS's informants, you know. So if they heard you say something or maybe witnessed you do something, say you're in the break room and you're talking about how you have a side job but you don't report it, well, that's the problem, because now they have information on you that they can go and anonymously tip off the IRS. Beware, and you don't want to cheat on your taxes, period. But you got to understand that this is what happens. These are the things that occur. Even if you're not wrong with what you're doing, these things occur and could trigger an audit. But at the same time, you do need to be careful of what you're either not putting on your tax return or putting on your tax return. You want to make sure that you're, you know, filing an accurate and correct return. That's what I support, accurate and correct tax returns. So number four is if you're a small business owner or a freelancer and someone with whom you do business with was audited, guess what? You have an increased likelihood of being audited too. Yay, you won. So even if your client, supplier, or other business associate was not committing tax fraud but simply got audited, people in companies that they paid or received money from are likely to be next. If they didn't correctly report payments, the IRS will want to see how the payers or the recipient's tax returns also match up. So with all this information, I'm going to leave you with a tip. While random selection has a low probability, most audit flags are beyond your control. So you want to always have proper substantiation in case you get that information request. That information request is that document or that letter that you get in the mail. All right? And you also want to make sure that you're doing your tax return correctly. If you don't know what you're doing, ask a professional, all right? And if you would like to know more on this, then please make sure you message me on Instagram at TaxExpert. So it's time for a music break. I'll come back and go on to topic number two.
To be with someone one now, but I gotta be straight up. Girl, I just wanna kiss and make up. Ooh, we done been through a lot of things. How do you throw that away? You were the heart of me. Can't believe you let it break. Tell me why you won't let him go. You can say what you want, but I know. Baby, no more lies. I'm gonna keep it real this time. Help me understand.
Crying out for me.
Going to talk about the 10 mistakes that most business owners miss when they're first starting out. So if you're an entrepreneur, you really want to listen to this segment right here because it's going to help you narrow down on the things that you may be a little weak in and put the pieces together or build yourself up. And again, if you have questions or anything of the sort, you may, you know, reach out to me. So the process of starting a business can be a really tough one, and there are numerous steps that need to be taken, and often in a certain order, especially when you're trying to legally establish your business. This process can be very overwhelming, and unfortunately, it's easy to overlook some important details and steps along the way. At some point, I am going to tell you guys about, you know, some of the hardships that I've had along the way when back when I started my company. And I'll have other entrepreneurs on so they could discuss some of the issues that they've had as well so that you can learn from those mistakes and be successful. But I am going to make you aware of the most common legal and compliance mistakes that are being made. So number one, buying employees as independent contractors. I hope I'm not speaking French when I say this, okay? But regulators are really coming down hard on misclassifications. Now, the IRS estimates that this problem includes millions of workers. So it's best for you to talk to an expert about it. But if you want to get some background information or guidelines, you could go on to the United States Department of Labor website. Or I can send you a PDF file that will help you determine what is what. But you really need to know if this person is technically an employee or if this person is technically an independent contractor, because you can run into a lot of trouble if you don't. Okay? Number two, choosing the wrong business structure. And I'm going to go into detail about the S-Corp versus the C-Corp in my next segment. But I do want to mention that this is one of the major, first major decisions that you'll need to make in regards to choosing your business. Of course, when you're trying to pick out what type of business you want to run, you need to pick out what type of entity it's going to be. And it could be something simple, such as a sole proprietor, or something complex, as a corporation. All right, so you need to keep in mind that these different types of business structures all offer different tax benefits. Some offer protection and some don't. They're very unique, but the structure can fit within your unique needs, okay? Now, number three is in regards to failing to apply for an employer identification number. So unless you're planning on operating your business strictly as a sole proprietor, in which case you'll, you know, most likely use your Social Security number unless you're going to have employees, but you'll need to apply for an employer identification number, also known as an EIN number, all right? Think of this number as a Social Security number for your business, And it will help you do things such as file your business taxes and open up a dedicated business bank account. So this is a very important number that you may need to have, and you really got to look into it and figure out, okay, do I have it? Do I need it? You better get it. All right. Number four, overlooking important permits and licenses. This is a really big deal. You should not operate your business if you don't have a permit for it or a license for it, and if you're supposed to have those things for it. All right. Not all industries require you to have a permit or a license or both, but you really need to do your research. A lot of states, if you go onto their website, will let you know if one is required, or even the municipality of where your business is going to be located or the county of where you're going to be located will tell you. But you really need to figure it out and know if this is required, because if not, it's going to cost you a lot of risk down the road, serious legal trouble that you really don't want to have. Number five is knowing when to speak to a professional. Just by you listening to this show right now shows that you know you need to have some type of professional knowledge or advice or, you know, guidance in your life, right? And when you're starting up a business, it's really not uncommon to be kind of like a one-man show or one-man operation. Because a lot of times you may not have the cash flow to hire someone full-time in your early stages. But you really don't need to have a professional full-time in the beginning. So to speak, it really depends on what you're getting into. But you should at the very least have somebody that you can turn to for advice and guidance when you need it to help you avoid serious legal issues later on. All right, so that's my advice to you. Consult a professional. Putting off a domain registration. All right, so a lot of times business owners don't register for their own website. That's a big problem because a lot of people want to be able to get information from you. I know that we're in social media age and it's about Instagram and it's about Facebook and Snapchat, but it's also good to have a website where you have a professional profile of who you are and what you offer and how people can get in touch with you and things of that sort. It's very good to have. And if you put off getting a domain name, somebody may take it later on. Domain names are very cheap. There are companies that sell them for 99 cents. So in my opinion, there's really no excuse for you not to have one and just hold it, even if you're not going to set up your website just yet. Number seven, the lack of a comprehensive business plan. So I firmly believe that the business plans from back in the day when they're like 35 pages long and a ton of information are no longer needed. However, your business plan still is a well-thought-out and articulate document which shows what your goals are and how you're going to achieve them. It is a roadmap for your business to follow, that it is a good thing for you to do so that you can know where you're going to go and how you're going to get there. You don't need a 35-page document. It could even be 5 pages, but as long as you have something down that can explain what you're doing. Now, this document is not just important for you, but if you ever wanted to get investors or, you know, some type of financing for your company, then they're going to want to see this so that they can see if you understand what you're getting yourself into. Number eight, not having finances squared away. All right, so another common mistake new business owners make is that of poor financial planning, which can lead to a lack of funding to get you through your first few months successfully. So I would like to trickle back one to the business plan concept, because if that part is done, you'll be able to see how you're going to get funding to survive, okay? This is something that a lot of business owners overlook or miscalculate to have really disastrous results. So the easiest way to avoid this mistake is to just consult with maybe a small business accountant in the early stages of when you're drafting your business plan, or somebody who specializes in this, or even another business owner or entrepreneur who has done it before. You want to talk to someone and you want to work it out and figure out what you're going to do, okay? Because a lot of businesses fail because of that. Number nine, failing to file patents on products or ideas. Okay, so we all know if you have a unique product or a prototype of design, you're going to file a patent on it. But what a lot of people forget to file patents on is their ideas or their intellectual property. That type of stuff can be stolen or copied as well and used by other entrepreneurs. So you need to protect yourself, you need to protect your business, and you need to realize that, yes, there are products that are valuable, but there's also intellectual property that is valuable also. Don't wait too long to file for a relevant patent or to, you know, get this process started, because it can be long and drawn out. So starting as early as possible would be in your best interest. Number 10 is being blind to important compliance requirements. Okay, so you want to make sure that you're aware of any and all compliance requirements that may apply to your business based on its structure, location, industry, and other factors. You got it? So even if you're keeping things simple by operating as a sole proprietor, you're going to be required to file and pay quarterly estimated taxes. So this is an example that I'm using to say that you need to be aware of any and all of your compliance requirements. There's not a lot of business owners that I know who know and understand how to calculate their quarterly estimated taxes. And if you don't know how to do it, then most likely you're doing it wrong. Then you get penalized. All right. So why not sit down with a professional, figure out what your tax requirements are and any other requirements by any other professional, maybe a lawyer or someone of that sort, so that you can make sure that you're not failing to meet any of these requirements. Because you don't want to end up in any type of serious legal trouble or just stupid fines and dumb penalties down the road, okay? So, you know, my tip here is that regardless of whether you're selecting a name or a business structure, you want to make sure that you're compliant at all times. And, you know, I hope that you have taken note of these 10 common business mistakes so that you can, you know, prevent yourself from having these issues and just maximize your chances of success in your first year of operation and beyond. Now, when I come back, I'm going to talk more about SNC Corp so that you could make a decision on if that's where you want to go. Actually, I shouldn't say if you could make a decision because it can be very detailed, and I'm just striking the surface here, but hopefully this will clarify some things for you or answer some questions for you. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back.
told the true definition of a man was to never cry. Work till you die, got to provide. Always be the rock for my fam, protect them by all means.
And give you the things that you need, baby.
Our relationship is suffering, trying to give you what I never had.
Say I don't know how to love you, babe.
Well, life ain't showed me the way. I keep my feelings deep inside, I channel them with my pride. I'm trying desperately, baby, just
see
work
how
with me.
Love, show me the way to surrender my heart.
Be strong, never let them think you care at all. Let no one get close to me before you and me. I didn't share things with you, girl, about my past that I'd never tell to anyone else. Just keep it to myself. Girl, I know I lack affection and expressing my feelings. It took me a minute to come and admit this, but see, I'm really trying to change now. Wanna love you better, show me how. Desperately, baby, please work with me.
Show me the way to surrender
my heart.
Girl, I'm so lost.
Yeah.
Teach me how to love, how I can get my emotions involved.
Yeah.
Teach me, please show me how to love. Show me the way to surrender my heart.
Welcome back. Okay, first, before I get started into this next topic, I want to talk about the next shows that are going to be on pregame radio. Excuse me. So Thursday nights at 9 p.m., we have the Real List radio show. Tune into that. Friday night, 10 p.m., we have pregame radio. Sunday at 1 p.m., we have Love, Peace, and Slander. And don't forget, we do have that Love, Peace, and Slander event going on right now at 189 Bridge Street. It's over at 12 midnight. I need you to go and check it out. All right? So I want to get into a few tax tips for you real quick before I go into the S-Corps versus the C-Corp. This is basically some data that was pulled from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it just goes over a few of – things, which talks about why opening a business is a huge risk. And hopefully it's something that you guys could be aware of to help you prevent from going this route. All right. So first things first, I'm going to say this quickly. 20% of small businesses fail in their first year, 30% fail in their second year, 50% fail after 5 years in business. You got that? Okay. Now, a CBI insight analysis gave the top reasons why businesses fail. This is based on this estimate, this analysis by them. 42% fail because there's no market need for their services or products. 29 failed because they ran out of cash. 23, and these are percentages, by the way. 23% failed because they didn't have the right team running the business. 19% failed because they were out-competed. 18% failed because of pricing or pricing issues. And as I'm saying these numbers, you may start to realize that obviously certain businesses failed for more than one reason, which is why the percentages, if you were to add them all up, would be more than 100%, because a lot of these companies failed for more than one reason, okay? 18% failed because of pricing or pricing issues, 17% because of poor product offering, another 17% because they lacked a business model, 14% because of poor marketing, another 14% because they ignored customers. And, again, a lot of these businesses have failed because of multiple things. So with that list that I just gave you, make sure that you are monitoring your business and not doing these things that other people have done which caused them to fail. Because we know that running a small business is really hard, and, you know, you really got to keep your eye on the cash flow process and any other money problems that may come into play. And, again, I can't emphasize how important it is for you to choose an experienced tax advisor and also an experienced advisor team which knows the keys to success and can guide you from start to finish. So I'm going to take a music break, and when I come back, we're going to talk about the S-Corp versus the C-Corp, and then we're going to wrap it up for the night. So I'll talk to you guys shortly.
Down my heart's in current and they carry both of us away. We were so much better when we were together, baby. And I just can't let you step away.
We're going to get to a big topic. It's today's highlight, and it is in regards to S-Corp versus C-Corp. Which one is right for you? Now, I've mentioned this new tax law a couple of times on the last show, probably once or twice on this show, I'm not sure, but it has left many of today's business owners with big questions, and incorporation is a really hot topic right now. So before you assume whether you should be one or the other, you need to carefully consider the facts. And you need to make sure that your organization is set up right, because you can face financial loss, hefty penalties, or even missed tax savings. So clearly the wrong decision can be costly. But my goal is to help you minimize tax burdens. So let's get to it. First off, in a C-Corp, the company pays corporate taxes to the Internal Revenue Service. Got it? A C-Corp pays taxes, but in S-Corp, there are no entity taxes. Rather, the taxes are paid through an individual return. This is called a pass-through entity. That's where your entity doesn't pay the taxes, but you do, and how this applies to these structures. Now, both of them are affected, but they both benefit here. All right. So for the C-Corp, the tax rate drops from 35% to just 21%. However, for the S-Corp, because the S-Corp does not pay taxes, but there is a new law that provides a deduction equal to 20% of the pass-through income from the corporation. Again, I'm going to repeat that. The new law provides a deduction equal to 20% of the pass-through income from the S-Corporation. However, if you are a high-income taxpayer, this just reduces your effective tax rate to 29.6% from 37%. So there are some restrictions, and I should say specific restrictions for high-income taxpayers. And there's some other restrictions that you need to know, which are based on various components. But I'm going to discuss some key areas here. So the first thing is in regards to the S-Corp versus C-Corp ownership. Now, a key component in deciding how to incorporate your business relates to ownership. In an S-Corp, there is a limit of 100 shareholders within the company. These must be domestic organizations operated in the United States, where all of the company's shareholders are also living in the United States. Additionally, this structure allows for a single stock classification. So that means as a business owner, you cannot offer common stocks as well as preferred stocks. If you're unsure of what these terms are, feel free to send a message to me and I will be able to answer them for you, okay? Now, I know we only have a few minutes left on the show, but if you have any questions, you can give me a call at 347-857-4302. Don't be shy. Just call in and press the number one when you call, and we could talk, okay? So now we're going to talk about, I was just mentioning how there is a single stock classification for the S-Corp, But when you compare it to the C Corp, there are actually fewer restrictions when it comes to the stock and the ownership. There's no limitation on the ownership at all, and there's no limitation on the number of shareholders the company can have. And any amount for the size of the company, such as whether it's small or medium, and they're planning an IPO, which is called an initial public offering, or if they're simply trying to obtain investors from the outside, the C Corp offers far more flexibility. So, you know, remember those comparisons. Like I said, if you're S Corp, you have to be located in the United States. It's only up to 100 shareholders, and there's only one share of stock, whereas C Corp is completely different. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the taxation, choosing the best tax structure. The reason why this is so important is because taxation is one of the most expensive hurdles any organization will have and that you will have to manage. And each structure has a different tax effect. So, for example, I know a lot of you heard this term, which is called double taxation. Well, C Corp is structured in that way. And the reason why it's called that is because the entity itself will have to pay a corporate tax. And then the shareholders will pay taxes on the income from the business. Now, this occurs when a dividend is distributed. So when you, as a shareholder, receive a dividend, you have to pay tax on that. But before that dividend has been distributed to you, it had already been taxed. So that's why they call it double taxation. You've been taxed twice. However, the new tax law does kind of give it a little break because, again, the rate changed from 35% to 21%. So it's not as harsh as it used to be, but you're still paying the tax twice, okay? And when it comes to shareholders, what is happening with an S Corp is that they're paying taxes once a year on the money that the company earns during the year of the tax return being filed. So that is really like a simple, straightforward scenario of how it works, but it gives you an idea that, or the concept that the S Corp is only paying tax once, whereas the C Corp is paying tax twice. Okay. So we're going to go on to talking about different company sizes from small to growing businesses to larger businesses. Okay, so if your company is small, operation for various reasons, and the first reason is because the income passes through and is taxable to the shareholders on their 1040 return, which eliminates double taxation, plus the lower tax rate and the 20% pass-through deductions are very beneficial to this structure. Now, when it comes to growing a small business, a growing small business, if your company is growing or if you plan to take it public or go on to new ownership, then the C Corporation offers the opportunity to do so. It also allows for a larger number of investors and internal and international investments as well. So there's a lot more flexibility when you have a C Corp and you're looking to grow, okay? Now, when you are growing, that means that you're going from small to medium to large, right? So in a growing C Corp, while you're small, you may not be likely to issue any dividends anytime soon. So as a result, this can reduce the amount of income reported to the IRS on an annual basis. Remember, we talked about the disadvantage of the double taxation, and it occurs when a dividend is distributed to its shareholders. But if you're not making any money and you're not issuing any dividends, then you're not getting taxed twice. Okay? So keep that in mind. Now we're going to talk about the circumstances for larger companies. So if you're a larger organization, it seems like the C-Corp may be the best structure overall. you'll have to definitely talk to your tax advisor or someone about it to just make sure. But the reason why is because there's so many different scenarios in which the C corporation can grow, and you're not limited on investors or your access to those investors, whereas the S corporation is pretty much limited, and their growth is kind of stunted. You know, it's very hard for S corp to grow. There's very little flexibility. Not saying that S corp cannot grow, because there are plenty of S corps out there that are large companies. But what I'm saying is, if you're looking for a specific type of growth, that flexibility would be limited. Okay. So when you're making these decisions, you really need to just slow down, and the implications and the financial burdens and limitations that each organization will have. And again, you could utilize a tax professional or an attorney to help you make a better choice. Because once you're in, you're in. I mean, you can change your entity depending on what you are and what you're changing to. But why would you want to go through that type of headache if you already know what you want to be from the start, or if you know what you should be from the start? And I remember back when I was talking about the 10 most common mistakes that business owner makes, and we talked about planning. If you're going through that business plan process and you're seeing what your forecast of income could look like, it will also help you determine which business structure you should be in. So that is it for tonight's show. I really want to thank you all for tuning in and listening to me. Again, you can check me out on Instagram at Tax Expert. Next week, I have a really good treat for you. I'm going to talk to you about how you can buy a house for the unpaid property taxes. That's excellent. It's somebody's misfortune, but it could be your come up. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to go through, you know, the scenario with you. And I have other tax topics that I'm going to talk about. It's going to be a real treat. So I hope to see you all again next week. Okay? Bye.